Hello, everybody. Welcome back to First Run Bald Movies. Tonight, we're talking about the Denis Villeneuve's new movie, Dune, 2021. Fuck everything else. There's one burning question on everyone's mind. Jim, what did you think of the movie Dune?
You mean, what did I think of the first part of what is inevitably going to have to be a mini part series? This isn't all of Dune, I take it. The title card that says Dune Part 1 and the ending that would make zero sense as a standalone film.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it was very imaginative and looks incredible. Like, I absolutely love everything about the design of this movie. It's off the charts. I don't know that I've ever seen anything like it, even in something like Foundation, which we're watching right now. It's just the variety of things you see on screen and styles is super impressive. As far as a movie goes, I think it's good, but like I said, it's the beginning of what is a obviously much bigger story, and I have like just a lot of questions about everything, so I don't really know how to feel about it.
Well, at least you don't hate it. I was hoping you'd be like, I fucking love it, I think it's great, I can't wait to see more. But I'll take bewilderment, honestly.
It looked amazing, and I think I was following everything it was putting down. I just have questions that I'm sure subsequent parts will answer.
Sure. And I will say this. This movie isn't exactly like the books. It's very close to the books.
Okay. I recognize some of those scenes because I've read the first few chapters of Dune.
Right. I've read Dune many times, and I just read it within the last year. I think I talked about it on lunch. Maybe I talked about on it on Off the Clock, but about how well it held up. Mm-hmm. And this movie feels a lot like watching Dune. Or, I mean, about reading Dune. You know, like it captures the same kind of feel of awe and grandeur, and it leaves things. I think it actually smooths over some things and is more explicit in some things than the book, but also it knows to hold just enough back to be a little bit mysterious and have a little bit of mysticism thrown in here, which I think is appropriate. Not to the extent that the David Lynch movie where it just was like, what the fuck am I even seeing? There's whole chapters missing. It's just, I think this is a hell of a good adaptation. And like you said, the art direction.
Yeah.
I can't even believe how well integrated the desert terrains and the different places that they obviously filmed on Earth are with these just gargantuan scale, inhuman scale things that are both beautiful and also like garden variety, you know, like
everything is epic, you know. Yes. Like the cities that they kind of carve into the sandstone there, and the, you know, ziggurat style, almost Mayan inspired feel of that stuff. And the way it integrates into the landscape is super cool. You've got these massive ships, just enormous. I don't even know, like they seem to load like 100 people on board, but it seems like it could fit 50,000 people.
And then those look like ants when they come out of the even larger intergalactic starships. Just right. Like, fuck.
Oh, are those starships? I thought those were some kind of like gateway transportation system.
I think they're the Spice Navigators freighter ships. So they're described as being just unfathomably large. Like the Atreides house vessels are also inhuman scale size, but they're just like grains of rice within the cargo bays of these things.
All right. And then just like, I don't know, everything was cool, even down to the small stuff, you know, like the thopters is what they call them, I think.
The ornithopters.
Yeah, with the do I want to say it? I don't know. Is it in the trailer? It's in the trailer, right?
What?
The they have like dragonfly type wings.
Yeah. The latest trailer has that. That's what I was waiting to see to get like fully relaxed. Is like, are they going to nail the thopters? And they did.
Yeah.
We talked about this, I think, on lunch or something, but, or maybe, no, it was, I guess it was the last time we did a First Run movie. I said, I just couldn't believe how cool these things are. And you don't even know the half of it from the trailer. Like, there's extended scenes based on the unique coolness and special abilities of these different craft.
Gotcha.
You know, that's the thing. It's like everything that I thought was cringy a little bit, like the shield fighting. I'm like, I don't know about that. Like the Duncan's rapport with Paul, like it felt a little Joss Whedon-y, a little too jokey. But that like in context, every single thing that I thought was a little cringe was fucking epic and felt extremely natural. Like, you know, it wasn't like a Waka Waka moment. They built up to that. Those are serious characters. And everyone is just that everyone is so well cast. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing how just rock solid and believable everybody is, even in roles that are like crazy unbelievable. Like when that Reverend Mother comes in there with her pain box, it's a gut check moment for them, because like if you're not in all that movie, that is just high comedy. What's this knitting needle and the shoebox? Get the fuck out of here.
So but that's like, one of the chapters I've read, which gave a lot of context and made me like not raise my eyebrows when this happened at all, because I knew what was happening.
But you think you would? Because I felt like that. I felt like the movie had firmly cast its spell over me. But then again, I guess I'm attuned to this Dune wavelength stuff. So.
Yeah, I found myself getting a little antsy toward the end of the movie. Like, maybe this was a tad bit too long. They spent a tad bit too much time at the end, you know, not wrapping this thing up. But they're also world building, like even right to the end. This movie is about 80% world building. And
just like the first part of Dune, like I remember, like the first 100 pages kind of take a while to get going, but they are building shit.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to movie two where we can actually do some shit. But I mean, stuff happens in this movie. Don't get me wrong. There is a lot of grandiose stuff happening. You know, the one thing I guess I expected out of Dune that I didn't get in this movie, and maybe I get it later, is I expected some substance to the style, because there's a lot. This feels like a Star Wars type tale. It's not going to teach you anything about the world or yourself. It's simply going to entertain you for a while. Does that change? Is that not what Dune is? Or is Dune more of just like an entertaining sci-fi, epic sci-fi novel?
Well, I think it's that, but like, I do think it says a lot about like environmental stuff and like gender dynamics and politics and you know, I mean, this is all, you know, broadly speaking, the horrors of colonialism and, you know,
sure,
that kind of stuff. So like I don't know, like it's something that I enjoyed as a 13-year-old. It's something that I really enjoyed as a 20-year-old, and it's something that I still found, like, I remember reading it just last year and thinking, like, yeah, this is still relevant. This still feels fresh. Okay. Like, you know, there's so many things that this book will teach you. But, you know, I felt like there's a lot of that, like, the, you know, a lot of the scheming, the intrigue. This is like the Phantom Menace in Star Wars, only not dumb.
Yes. Well, that's very much how it felt. It felt like the politics light version of a sci-fi thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm like looking for too much out of this, but that's what it felt like to me.
Okay. I'm trying to think where I want to stop. Cause I think there's some debate about where this movie ends. And like, to your point about it being maybe slightly too long, where a place that could have it ended, because I kind of feel you. Because man, the movie really hits a crescendo of just grandeur and epicness and awesomeness and heroic sacrifice and just everything you want. Like, it's like Luke blows up the Death Star and then Star Wars keeps going for another 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And gets Luke to like, on the way, like there's nothing as cool as the Hoth sequence, but he's on his way to Dagobah.
Yep.
But he hasn't met Yoda, and we're just going to stop right there, right as he crash lands into Dagobah. And again, no Hoth battle.
Yeah.
They're just they're just walking through snow for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's definitely what it felt like to me. But, you know, the rest of it was so entertaining. I'm willing to sit through a little bit here at the end to get to the next movie.
No, I mean, I even during that stretch, because again, I'm familiar with the story, and I was just kind of like, huh, I wonder where they are going to end it. And it wasn't like, that's the thing. It's like, I'm being kind of jokey. There wasn't mm-hmm. nothing that's happening there. It's just like, again, the high point in the movie came like 45 minutes ago. But the thing is it is so fucking awesome. I can't wait. I'm going to watch this movie at least a couple more times in a theater. I definitely want to take Jack to the IMAX up in the Indiana State Museum, the like full size, not diet, not zero, like the fully leaded IMAX experience, because this is like just the most beautiful movie I've seen in a long time. It is sounds amazing, like the sound design from the when they're using the voice to like the way the prophecies and the dream sound.
The music just, all is very identifiable depending on whose theme it is. They don't have so much as like themes, but just like styles of music for each of the houses.
Yeah.
I thought that was very cool. I will say that, speaking of sound, did you have any issues with hearing the voices in this show about like the midway mark? There's a scene which has a bunch of like Tibetan throat singing stuff in the background.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And I didn't have any trouble up until then. And then after that, the sound on the voices just cuts out to nothing. Nothing. I rewound it to make sure it wasn't like, oh, my EQ is
for the rest
dynamically
of the
adjusting. Not for the rest of the movie, but in like probably 20% of the rest of the movie. It was just nothing. I couldn't hear it.
No, I did not have that problem. I did not have that problem.
Yeah, I had issues with that.
Wild. But yeah, no, I definitely, I think this is worth seeing on a big screen. I don't know if you agree.
Oh, yeah, I would say it's worth it if you're into it, yeah.
As big a screen as you can see it on, because that's the thing. It's like, you know, we're going to see this. There's a small window where you can see this on a really big fucking screen.
True.
And then you won't have that experience. So. It looks incredible. The cast is great. I thought, you know, like I took everything seriously, and I thought they did a really good job at the world building mm-hmm. and just like the lore, and like these cultures feel real, even though you just see glimpses, glimpses of like this, just really weird shit. And like, you know, pastiches of different religions and cultures, and it's just all mashed up, and it comes together to feel very alien.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, but also very recognizable. It's a feudal system.
Motivations of the characters are very recognizable, even if the technology and the cultures are not.
Yeah, I think this, again, if you don't like this movie, you won't like the book, because I think this movie does a very, very good job of capturing what it feels like to read the book and have your mind. I mean, because like I said, I don't know if it's like important in the way you're looking for it, but it's like one of those things where it's like the ideas are big and it feels important, and also you're just thinking like, for, you know, I was exposed to so many concepts, and it captures the scale, because I think the prose does a really good job of showing, you know, that this, it's a big thing about humanity just being such a small thing against the overall galaxy, against, you know, their starships and their buildings, against the fucking sandworms, you know, like we're just a small part, but yet we have so much power.
These books were written a long time ago, right?
Yes, they were. So Foundation came first in the 40s and 50s, and then the Dune books came in the 60s and 70s. Yeah,
I was gonna say it probably inspired a lot of people, because mm-hmm. I'm seeing all kinds of inspiration of other things in this. I'm seeing a shitload of Star Wars, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like the ziggurat village town civilization I was talking about looks like the surface of a Death Star or something. Even in the art direction, it's inspiring it.
Yeah, for sure. Dune is hugely influential.
Yeah,
I was
Tremors.
Just, the other thing is Tremors, yeah. I was just thinking, you know, when I watched the David Lynch one, I remember thinking like how much that must influence the guys that do the Warhammer 40K stuff. And even in this, it's just like, yeah, you're right. The original source is pretty fucking gothic. And, you know, I want to talk more about that in the spoilers because like just the epic scale. There's something about that. I don't know. Something about this scale of science fiction and Foundation is on this wavelength, too. But this is just even more grim. There's something with a little bit more bottom to it.
Yeah, the forces at work here feel outsized to anything we can comprehend.
How hungry do you think the general public's going to be for the sequel? Do you think this is going to make a bunch of money? Do you think this is going to be really pop?
Yeah.
Because this is two hardcore nerds talking about this, but how accessible do you think this is to people who... You know, they're stumbling around looking for another Game of Thrones, for example. Maybe.
Ooh, no, I would not recommend this to Game of Thrones fans.
Really? Okay.
No, I would recommend this to...
What if they just really want to see Khal Drogo kick ass one more time?
Sure. what if they want to see Khal Drogo without a beard? Because that's weird.
It is. Seeing Jason, it's every once in a while you see him without a beard and it's like,
Yeah, he still didn't have a beard in Conan, did he?
No, I think that's one of the big problems of it. Yeah.
Okay.
It's like you don't take the man seriously or anything. It's just, but he loses, like, he takes a -5 hit to his charisma whenever his beard is shorn.
I loved him in this.
He's the best. He's like, man, when we do the badass scale again, he's going to have another fucking solid character because, wow, Duncan Idaho. What a name. What a
fucking awful name.
What a name, huh? Frank Herbert's wilding in this book. He's like, one of the religious documents called the Red Catholic Bible. What?
Really?
What is? Yeah. Hmm. What does that mean?
Is that what Josh Brolin's reading, or is he working on his?
He might be. He actually might be, but he's also
Working on his. What is it? Arrakis. Where's the bathroom?
He's kind of a bard. Oh, he's kind of a bard. You know,
okay,
like a poet warrior kind of guy.
Gotcha. All right. Maybe we should get to some trailers and then do some spoiler talk.
Then we got to do some spoiler talk because that's about all we got left to go into. There's two trailers that came out this week that I was curious about your opinion on. Let's talk about The Batman first. This all is right. The sparkly vampire version of Batman.
Robert Pattinson.
What do you think about the DC rolling out they're rebranding the Suicide Squad, the Batman. They're gonna have the Green Lantern out next because that one's in bad need of rehabilitation.
Is this true?
I don't know, but it's a trend I noticed. The Suicide Squad, the Batman. This isn't the shitty Batman. This isn't the Affleck Batman we tried to roll out. This is,
as long as they don't get the Zack Snyder to direct any of these, I'll be fine. Or especially write any of these. No, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you think? What do you think of Pattinson as Batman?
I thought it looked pretty cool. I was shocked to see Halle Berry about 30 years younger and reprising her role as Catwoman.
Rolled the clock back, huh?
Boy, they really just like leaned into that depiction of Catwoman, huh?
I guess so. Looks, do you think like this her. Is? Yeah.
Which
I thought
totally fine. I mean, Robert Pattinson seems like a pretty good Batman.
Pretty good Batman. What do you think of the Bruce Wayne?
The hair is not doing it for me. He's not as clean cut as I want my Bruce Wayne to be.
He seems like one of Ramona Flowers' evil exes from Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. He's got the weird kind of Brandon Lee, the Crow hair. Uh-huh. And then when he's like fresh out of his Batman mask and his like Batman mascara is running down his face, it's just like, he's full on the Crow, man. I don't...
Well, it's got
the wrong flying animal. It's the Crow looking Batman.
For me, it was too much. What's Marty McFly's dad's name in Back to the Future? It was too much Crispin Glover hair for me. I couldn't handle it.
It is a little Crispin Glover.
Yeah,
I don't know. I the Batman stuff looks great. They're really leaning into being like bulletproof, apparently. I thought Batman was like lithe and fast and avoided gunfire, but this guy just kind of like tanks it. Fuck it, I don't care.
That's a really cool shot. I mean, the gun going off being the only light in that hallway and the strobe effect. Very cool.
Yeah, gives a real staccato nature to the scene.
Am I crazy to think, and it's probably been announced, but I haven't been paying attention, that Paul Dano is playing the Riddler in this?
I think so.
Because I love Paul Dano. I think he is.
I do too.
Fantastic. And as a unhinged riddle master, yes, please.
Yeah, he is the Riddler.
Awesome. All right, I'm in for
the
this
penguin.
One. Who's the penguin?
Colin Farrell under a bunch of makeup.
Oh, right. I saw a shot of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeffrey Wright's James Gordon, Jim Gordon, Commissioner Gordon, and Andy Serkis is playing Alfred. No. I saw him in there. What? Yeah. So this is a much, much younger Batman with a much younger Alfred.
Yeah, that's a much gruffer Alfred than I'm used to.
Also, Alfred's got some skills in the canon. He was like a World War II, I can't remember if he's some kind of spy or combat medic, or he's kind of a badass in his own right. So in his prime, you know, he might be a little bit of a Robin type figure. Maybe he joins Batman in some of these adventures. I don't know.
Yeah, when I think of Alfred, I think of polish, a certain amount of put togetherness that I do not associate with Andy Serkis.
That's
in
true.
Any
he
way.
He plays rough and tumble types. Yeah. I wonder if he can be genteel.
I don't know.
If he can be a gentleman's gentleman. We'll see. We'll see. The other one, Uncharted. What
you know
do you
who
think
else?
Of Uncharted?
Who else I don't associate with being genteel and polished? Nathan
Suave,
Drake.
Smooth. Yeah.
Nathan Drake. What is this movie? This movie looks like absolute garbage.
It's, I don't know.
Am like I they, crazy? They, Neither they, of they, these guys are acting. They've got Mark Wahlberg up there pretending to be a young Sully, I guess.
Because his name is Sully and he's presumably from Boston, they're just like, yeah, fucking get Marky Mark. Because this is bad casting. Like,
terrible. Tom Holland is not Nathan Drake.
And they can be their do their own thing with it, I guess. But like, I'm not excited about this movie. This movie seems very eh.
This movie is made for an audience that doesn't exist. It's a mass market movie for people who haven't played the video games.
Oh, so every other video game that's ever movie that's ever been made in human history,
pretty
like,
much,
you know,
and failed, flopped on its face. Yeah, those.
Yeah. I don't know. There's like five dudes that could be really good Nathan Drakes out there right now. We have an embarrassment of Drakes out there, and they get Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know. It's like, that's the thing. It's like, I feel like they're trying to make a halfway between those Uncharted backstory between Nathan and his brother, like that age and his actual Nathan Drake, full grown dude. And it's like, who wants to see the adventures of young Nathan Drake?
Not
I don't even like
that
was Indiana Jones. Who fucking cares, man?
Yeah, maybe once I'm invested in these characters as movie characters, then you can go back and do this, but not yet. They took four games to get back to that stuff?
You're right. Because imagine if you just... Would anyone watch Young Indiana Jones Chronicles if you didn't see Indiana Jones? Fuck no.
No.
It put you off the movies. So
I will say there's one cool thing that I liked about this movie. And it is the boxes falling out, the cargo net boxes falling out of the plane. I thought that was very video game like and didn't seem too silly.
Yeah, it felt like a big set piece from an Uncharted game. And I was going to say that there are a couple scenes where they really capture the excitement and kind of pell-mell. Just Indiana, like, you know, these are like modern day Indiana Jones, where it's like you're supposed to be like Indiana Jones. You're not especially good fighter. You're not especially good. You just kind of like are one step ahead, just going from one damn thing to another, swinging on people and jumping over shit until it's over, you know.
Except Nathan Drake wears ratty, torn, dirty ass t-shirts, cargo pants and work boots or hiking boots, right?
Yeah,
they've got Tom Holland in a tuxedo for half this fucking... He's not James Bond.
No.
That didn't feel like Uncharted at all.
I mean, Nathan, he will wear a suit to, like, you know, be the waiter of...
when he steals.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he doesn't not wear suits, but it's like, I don't know. They're leaning into that Casino Royale to try to maybe lure some... That's what I'm saying. It did feel like it's something that doesn't feel like enough people will care about it because it's Uncharted and they're like, gotta make it, you know, people need to think about James Bond and people need to think about Mission Impossible and people need to think about Fast and Furious.
No.
And it's like, no, Uncharted's cool. You can just make it be Uncharted, Jesus.
Yeah, we fell in love with those characters already. People will do it all over again if you just present those characters.
That's like, the other thing is like, and I think they're going to find this out, The Last of Us. Video games are as big as Hollywood. Like, if you make a good adaptation of something, you will have millions and millions of people, like, way more than a fucking successful novel or comic book series. Mm-hmm. Way fucking more. And way more fucking invested. Just, tell the story, man.
What do you think is going to be the worst movie? Is it going to be Uncharted, or will it be the Mario movie, whatever that is, with Chris Pratt playing Mario?
Probably Mario.
Just a series of bad castings.
Uncharted might just be meh, just might be like a bowl of vanilla ice cream, fine, you know, but could use some sprinkles. But Mario could be like historically bad, like something that's just like a monument.
The first Mario Brothers movie? Yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, like there's potential for greatness in a perverse way here. Have Hoskins and Leguizamo show up at the at the end. Okay, let's put these trailers to bed and let's excuse everyone out from the room that's not a patron or club member, because we're about to talk about spoilers, and that's just for our loyal supporters. All right, Jim. Damn, this movie, Jason Momoa, I've wanted this guy to be an unabashed badass that, like, takes himself seriously for so long. Like, I'm so tired of him playing, like, beer can crushing on his forehead type characters like Aquaman and shit.
Yeah.
And he just definitely nails this kind of, like, noble warrior kind of guy that can believably take on a dozen of the emperor's best men, the Sardaukar, the sauerkrauts. He's just so fucking badass in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I love all the shield. That's the other thing. It's like, I love the concepts, like the shields making, that's why it's so fucking Warhammer, like the shields making ranged combat so difficult that you warp back around to melee with mono molecule edges and vibrating blades that can like just part matter at the molecular level. Like you warp back around to like melee weapons are actually the way you win wars. And I don't know if it makes sense in the strictest sense of the word, but goddamn, is it cool? Is it like,
guys
coming with vibro knives is butchering each other with 3D shields is way better than the stormtroopers shooting at each other.
I don't know that I picked up all the technical stuff on how that was working, though. I picked up on the, you know, slow blade gets the worm or whatever.
Yep, that's, you got it. that's the rule.
Yeah. So I get what they're doing there. I thought it was super cool with the whatever kind of darts they're using. Like they use it a couple times in the movie. One of them goes at Jason Momoa and he is able to like kind of sweep it away with his sword. It'll hit the shield and it'll slow down and keep pressing in slowly.
It goes real slow and it's, I mean, that's the thing about the knife fighting. It's all about timing. So like the best human knows exactly when the slowest stroke down to pierce the shield and then ram it home.
Yeah.
Where the machines are just kind of like, you know, that it's, they're like game. Like, I don't know. There's like slow and steady, and you have a little bit of time. Unless it's in the middle of your back,
that
then you're
was what was so cool. He just couldn't reach it, right? If he could have reached it, he could have just swept it away. But that was super cool. Like you can have perfect timing, or you can have perfect like aim, dead accurate on their back like that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was cool.
I'm trying to think because like I compared this to the experience of reading the book and I think it compares very favorably. I was thinking about the experience of it compared to David Lynch's version. And the only thing I liked better in the David Lynch's version is the scene where the Duke spits the poison gas at the Baron.
Hmm.
Because in that version, like the Atreides, the Leo, is it Leo Atreides?
I don't know.
Fuck. I've lost a piece Paul's of my dad. Brain. Paul's dad. Bites down the tooth and spits it. In this one, he's very loopy because he's been fucked up and he's like not seeing straight and kind of like a little bit hallucinating about his wife and his daughter, which I think they kind of do that in the book. Maybe this is actually how it happens in the book too. But like, it's the Baron and his Mintat, that little like the human computers you saw like roll their, they had the little stripe on their lip and they rolled their eyes back in their head to do computing.
Yeah.
He thought it was the Baron leaning in his face and they had actually switched positions and it was now the Mintat, and he bit down on his tooth and spit the poison at him. So the Baron just got like a glancing blow.
Oh.
This was like the VX nerve gas going off in the bunker of the beginning of the rock. And
yeah,
and I'm like, how are they going to explain? Like,
they don't.
Maybe the Baron just gets like, you know, because I maybe fucked up. He's like going to be hacking and coughing and Darth Vader mask or Bane mask the rest of it. But no, he's just kind of using the suspensor belt to float on the ceiling.
Yeah, I don't understand. So maybe I didn't get that. I was just like, well, maybe he's too powerful for I don't know.
Yeah, I thought that was weird that it's powerful enough to literally kill everyone in the room, but he's able to suspend up to the top and suck air along. I don't know. That's the one thing I thought the Lynch, and that's not much. This movie's got it all over everything else about. I remember in the trailers thinking that I was kind of skeptical about the worm design because like the Lynch Dune worms are pretty fucking iconic. They did a pretty good job with it. But the way they did kind of like the worms use some kind of ultrasonic thing or like made the like pump the local the sand full of air to where it like liquefied.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just so cool because it makes so much more sense than like these are just giant worms that are kind of like, I don't know, slithering through. No, they have some way to like manipulate the sand to make it turn liquid, and the Freeman have kind of mastered that technology too. I don't know if you noticed that that's how like Paul pitched his tent. He just has this like little thing that like blurs the sand, and then it covers them over, and then they can blur the sand out. I just thought that was such a cool effect, and I actually like these worms that are like these giant maws that are just full of these razor sharp kind of like whale baleen. I thought they were really, really great.
I don't know where they're going with his like spirit link with the sandworms, because clearly there's something there near the end. But I thought it was super cool, just the visual there, because the mouth looked so much like an eye when it's looking at him.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's a lot of cool imagery there.
Yeah. They're gonna go places. I'm trying to think.
Yeah, that Denis Villeneuve guy. He might be onto something.
Man, I thought so. I felt like they did a really good job of showing the world of Arrakis and like, you know, the palm grove that they had that represents the life of 100 men. But it's sacred because they've got this dream of like, you know, turning. It's kind of like Martians, you know, from The Expanse. And how like the Fremen, Representative Stilgar opens up. He's like, just very, has no propriety, and he's abrupt, and he just comes right up to the Duke and spits on his table. And like, you know, you think that this is an insult, but they explain like, no, he's actually sharing his water with you.
Mm-hmm.
And how the Freeman culture is all there. They'll go, I'm sure, go into that more in the second half of the, or maybe, I don't know, this could be a trilogy. But like water is sacred to them. Like everything's about conservation of the water.
Well, until you start filming it and then you tell all the actors, no, we're not doing this movie with masks. Fuck that. And when you start to think about how much water actually comes out in your breath.
Yeah.
Yeah. Put your fucking mask on, you idiots. None of them are wearing masks. 90% of this movie.
To breathe out their nose tube. That's what's supposed to cover. I agree. Like, I actually thought it was
the main characters
admirable that they actually had the full hood and they actually showed them using the full thing that would keep you from losing a thimble of water. I was actually impressed that they went full on with that. But yeah, you've got beautiful people. You got, you know, you gotta let their faces breathe.
Sure.
Sure. You can't keep them under the ninja shit all movie long.
So let me talk about one of the other things in the imagery that is both cool but also horrible. I don't know what this is. I don't know if it's coming back, but whatever this hand spider, the hand foot spider thing with
drinking Baron's, in it. The, I don't, the Baron's pet.
It's disgusting. I hated it.
It is. The Harkonnens, the Harkonnens. Uh-huh. That's the other thing is today I learned I've been mispronouncing, get this, almost every term from the book Dune that wasn't pronounced correctly in the David Lynch version of the movie. The Harkonnens are just gross people. I don't know if you picked this up.
They seem pretty gross.
They're just, that was probably the fusion of two slaves that displeased them. That's what I'm saying. Like, this is the reason I really like the Warhammer universe is because it's just a Dune universe with everything turned up to 11 at a base level. Like, and I was admiring, like, they showed the Imperial Sardaukar, the space marines of this universe, and how, you know, they're supposed to be fanatically loyal and they're all this and they're all that. But there's like, I don't know if you notice in the background, there's these like slaves that are like strung up sideways and their neck are slit. And they're bleeding into literally a river of blood that they're using to anoint their warriors before they're going to battle. I'm like, Jesus Christ, that is right out of some Games Workshop shit.
Yeah.
It's really, really fucking dark. And I like Herbert, really, when he deals with the Harkonnens and some of the nastier places of the Imperium, he paints in those colors that you just rarely see in science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the depiction of all of the Harkonnen stuff is awesome. I don't know his name, the main Stellan Skarsgård,
the Baron,
yeah. His depiction is awesome. He's kind of a man, but very much not. He's bigger than any human I've ever seen. He's all distorted. He's got this spine that's some kind of like electronic spine that, mm-hmm, I think that's the thing that's allowing him to like levitate in this long skirt or something that makes him look unnaturally tall. It's wild, but I loved it.
Yeah, he's an interesting character, and it's the first time, like, I usually he's played with like a Tommy Lee Jones fervor from like a Two-Face, you know, like cackling maniac. And that's not how he is in the book. Like, the book, he's like, he's not dumb. He's very, very smart, and he sees all the angles, and he knows how to play his role. And I felt like Skarsgård really nailed that aspect. He's still repulsive. He's still unredeemably evil, but he's not a madman. He's not like the fucking Joker.
Yeah.
And this is the first time I've actually seen a depiction kind of like nail that aspect of him. I think that I know that this was all filmed on Earth, but goddamn, the wherever they did all this, the location scouting, and I don't know how much they filled in with mats and digital stuff, and clearly Earth doesn't have like three moons or whatnot, but like, I could not believe how convincingly alien these worlds looked. Not just what they were doing on Arrakis, the desert planet, but I think the Atreides homeworld is Caliban, something like that. Like, their like paradise planet was really well imagined, and then the Harkonnen Blade Runner world looks like it just looks like all of the planet is the mining colony from Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
all of those things are just really well done. The ceremony where the Atreides accepted the Emperor's bequeathal of the Arrakis spice mining stuff, super cool. Like, I've never seen spice navigators visualized like that. Like, these guys are walking around in fish bowls of this orange. They're just inhaling the spice all the time because it's, you know, the whole thing is the navigator. Mm-hmm. They explain this in the movie, but the navigators can't fold space correctly and navigate space time without being just high off their ass on the spice gas. I thought that stuff was really cool.
Do they have any over mining problems? Is there any conservation effort of the spice, or are they just mining the shit out of this planet willy-nilly?
That's the thing. There is an intrinsic link between the spice and the worms and desert being an uninhabitable or near uninhabitable hellscape. that they kind of hint at, like that imperial ecologist talked about how, you know, this planet could be a paradise with the right conditions, but
I think they're
going to get into that.
Okay.
Like there's a lot of ecology in this movie, like the circle of life, like how if you do one thing to one environment, it can kind of like have runaway cycles and, you know.
Yeah, this is why I don't want to write it off as like a movie for kids or something, like a YA sort of experience, mm-hmm. because I can mm-hmm. feel that there's something more to it, but they didn't get into it. And like the biggest question I have is, what is the Empire's play here? Because they do something just seemingly incredibly stupid in this movie, which is they take the planet of Arrakis away from the Harkonnen, they give it to House Atreides, mm-hmm. and then they back the Harkonnen to come in and destroy House Atreides. Why? There's no information about why that happened. And I assume they're going to get to that.
I think there is, though, because like they're essentially saying that Atreides has grown very powerful of recent. Like,
but why not? Why the switcheroo? Why the switcheroo of the planet? Why don't they just kill them on their planet?
What? Oh,
too hard?
Because you can't. So the Empire can't. Like, the other thing is, this is all done under the cover of darkness. Like, the idea was you're going to kill every Atreides, so no one will be able to say that the Empire stepped in. Because the other thing is, like, there's a blood feud between the Atreides and the Harkonnens that go back like hundreds of years.
Okay.
They hint that when like the Baron meets with the Duke for the first time and he says, you know, our old enemies or whatever. But like I think this movie will reward multiple watches. I don't know if you care to give it multiple watches. But like, I do think a lot of these things are explained if, like, when it's not the first time washing over you and you're just like, holy shit, look at all this stuff and listen to all this stuff.
Well, I got that the Harkonnen and the Atreides were enemies. I just don't know why they don't go and kill them on their planet. Why do they need them to come to Arrakis to kill them?
Well, I think it's because the Empire needed to look like they're rewarding the Atreides for being popular and prosperous, and also punished the Harkonnens for being brutal, and they were starting to lose a lot of spice because the Fremen were starting to rebel and chafe under their rule. So the Emperor is going to like seemingly give the Atreides a hand in friendship by simultaneously allowing the Harkonnens to kind of seem to lose a little face, but not really. And it's all about maintaining the fine balance of power between the other ruling houses. The Empire is the strongest, but also kind of the weakest, because they don't have, I think they have like the power, but like all of the, all the real power is held by the space navigators. Then you got the Bene Gesserit that are also manipulating everything. And then the ruling houses have all the actual money. So
are the ruling houses going to expect the Empire to retaliate against the Harkonnen for breaking an imperial decree? Like,
that's the thing I don't understand, because like, yes, while the Empire appeared to play, not play favorites in this battle, I don't understand why the Harkonnens, I don't know if this is explained in the book or not, why the Harkonnens felt like they could just waltz in there and kick the Atreides' ass in and like, you know. But I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like they're scapegoating. The Harkonnens are willingly scapegoating themselves for the Empire for some reason.
It could be that, or I don't know. Like, there might be some like payola, and I honestly don't know.
Maybe they're getting a new bigger cut of the spice or something.
Because I remember thinking that when I was watching it, and I'm like, well, maybe they, it's like, I can't remember what they're in. I was just enjoying it so much. I'm just like, whatever, you know, there might be. I think part of this you're supposed to understand is the Emperor is getting weak. Like, this is kind of a, I don't know if you're, that's the thing. It's like, I don't know if they'll explain it or they'll like, you'll come to appreciate that this is kind of like an unforced error that's going to put him in a bad position. Because here's the thing, like now, like, cause I think, the Baron alludes to how much this cost him in treasure to like grease all the wheels and pay all the palms and pay for all the troops and stuff.
Yeah.
And now he has to make Arrakis produce spice like nothing before.
Yeah.
But he's got millions of, you know, essentially rebel troops that he doesn't even know about, perhaps led by a charismatic young messianic figure and, you know, is like, what could bring the Harkonnens down? Not being able to produce spice. What could keep you from producing spice? A fucking homegrown terrorist operation. So, that's what you well, like, we got to look forward to in the next movie to come.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
My question, as far as the pacing on this, would they not have been better off ending the movie pretty soon after the massacre of the Atreides? Because then you've got almost a return. You've got an Empire Strikes Back ending where it's like, God damn those Harkonnens. Mm-hmm. I can't fucking wait to see Atreides, you know, get revenge in the next movie. But then I guess you got the movie opens with kind of a relatively long trek into the desert. And
I mean,
then they're found by the, and you got to introduce the Keen's.
Isn't that Empire Strikes Kine's Back character? Though? Like, yeah, I mean, he's training with Yoda on a swamp planet for half that movie.
So. Yeah. But like I said, but the end of it is not. The end of it is Luke got his ass whipped and the rebels got their ass whipped the whole movie and they're, you know, out barely hanging on the outer rim of the galaxy. But then you've got like, what's the Jabba sequence? Well, you got to get like through 30 minutes of pretty dry movie before you get the Jabba sequence. And the Jabba sequence is a knife fight. So like,
I think they could have shortened that desert stuff up. I don't know that we necessarily needed to see them surviving. I guess you got to have the premonition, but they did like 15 premonitions in this
they
movie.
Might they might have done a little some. Too many premonitions, but it still's not
pointless ones. Just him like looking at the girl and her looking at the desert.
One of those.
And, like, and that was kind of.
But they are trying to build that. You got to really feel the moment when he sees her for the first time. Like, holy shit, she's real. Like, you know, he's starting to understand that, like, you know, like he's going to start really trusting in these visions for good and ill.
I guess I, as an audience member, trusted in them almost from the jump. Like when he saw one and I heard that he had like special abilities, it's like, okay, well, this is clearly going to happen. She's real and he'll meet her. But I don't know. Yeah, he has to trust it too. I get that.
Because I feel like this movie had found the way to end itself about 5 or 10 minutes after, you know, you get, I don't know, maybe Duncan escaping on the Thropter.
Mm-hmm.
And you find a way to end it like five, like it's like just a breathless end. Like that's those 20 minutes, the Harkonnen attack against the Atreides are some of the most epic shit that I've seen in all my science fiction watching.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just really like, it's like when they come at each other with swords and the shields are all flaring and
Just the initial part of that attack where they're blowing up all their ships was impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really, I, and again, I think they did a really good job of showing like the Fremen culture, like I said, with Silgar being real abrupt and, you know, matter of fact and, you know, also there's a little bit of like total not compromise, like to a stupid degree to the Fremen that they introduced in this movie, which I thought like that guy. That's an interesting thing. Like Paul saw the guy that he murdered, I forget his name, as going to be someone who kind of like teaches him the ways of the Fremen.
Yeah, friend.
He's wrong, though. Super wrong.
Seems like it.
So that's interesting. Not all of his, like, what does that mean when he had a vision that, but
about
I mean,
the
it's also
in his name. Yeah.
But also, if you think about it, was it true in a Obi-Wan Kenobi type of way that he did teach him a lot about the Fremen way?
I mean, yeah, this is a kill the boy story, right? Like Jon Snow in Game of Thrones. It's not, oh, I'm going to take a knife to the guts and I'm going to fall over dead and I'll become, you know, I'll rise up stronger than I ever was before. It's not like Obi-Wan Kenobi in that regard. It's more like from a certain point of view, you did die and you became a new person, right? In the Jon Snow kind of way.
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, I love, man, the way I thought they don't even stop to explain the Mentats, the human computers, but they just like way they had them roll their eyes back in their head when they're doing calculations. I thought that was so fucking cool.
Oh, is so. It's not Atreides that has one of those. One of those guys is Lewis from Devs, right?
Yes. Okay. Stephen McKinley.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
He looks really great in that little uniform of his. And then What is that guy's name? David Dastmalchi. The guy he plays a lot of weirdos. He played the Harkonnen version of that guy.
Yeah, I've seen him around.
I just like man, there's so much cool stuff about the overall universe of Dune that they get into the novels, and they just kind of hint at in this picture. But I think that's appropriate. I think you'd rather want this movie typifies what Star Wars forgot. Star Wars was so much cooler before midichlorians.
Yeah.
Like, how does the voice work? Who the fuck knows? These space nuns have been spending 1,000 years sharpening their wiles against men, and this is the apex result of it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that's it. You know, how does the shield technology work? The slow blade gets the worm. Like Jim said, like, you know, how can a fucking ornithopter fly a number one with all six of its wings?
Right.
How can it glide on two? That surface area is not.
No.
Who gives a fuck? It's like it's some kind of vibranium shit. I don't unobtainium. Like they don't explain. They just do things and let you think about like what humans might get up to in 10,000 years in the future when our technology is magical.
I've got another how the hell question for you. How the hell, when you look at the size of Timothy Chalamet's finger and you look at the size of Oscar Isaac's ring, how the hell did that ring slip on him and not slip immediately off? Because he has tiny little baby fingers.
He does.
And the ring is 22 sizes too big for him. It's incredible.
He wrapped dental floss around the ring in Fremen desert fashion.
Sure.
You know,
that's where his mask went. He took the mask off his face and put it around his finger.
I've seen so many attempts at making that Fremen walking without rhythm look cool, and they nailed it. Like, that's like such a cool, graceful kind of like dance step. It looked like, yeah, it looks like, okay, that's what you would look like to walk without rhythm. I thought,
yeah, that is what it would look like. I appreciate that they didn't show it for more than 1.5 seconds at a time, because it wouldn't hold up.
Yeah,
tedious section of the movie, it would be. I might have turned it off. I might have if they did like a 15-minute scene of them sand dancing.
God, everyone crushes it in this movie. Timothy Chalamet is such a great Paul. Like,
he is.
Another thing that none of the adaptations have nailed is the fact that this guy is like a boy. And I might have just really sickly burnt Timothy Chalamet because I have no idea how old this. Oh my God, this guy's 25 years old. Anyway.
Okay.
He convincingly plays like a 15, 16 year old kid. Like even the Stark children never really portrayed this kind of like, you know, vulnerability. Like, this kid is not ready to be that head of House Atreides, let alone the one, you know,
just stepped out of One Direction, not the One Direction.
Right. That this product of thousands of years of careful breeding program to create the supreme being that can wield space time at a whim. But he's thrust into this. And there's also that, like, you know, captures that kind of like not like angsty teenager, but like scared and angry. Like, why did you do this to me? I'm your child. Damn. He really brought it. And I wasn't sure he could, because I've seen some stuff in it that I've thought he's decent in. I've seen some stuff that I thought he's like, eh.
Interstellar? Playing a young Tom.
Oh yeah, no, that wasn't. What is the stuff I've seen? That
I don't think I've seen
impressed?
Him in anything.
He was in Little Women. That's the one thing that I thought I've seen that he was really good in. I was really hoping, because he looked good in the trailers. Him and Zendaya look good together. I don't have a very good read on Zendaya as Sean. She looks great.
Yeah, she's only in it for 2 minutes.
And she's just very, like, Fremen's are very stoic, and they don't give you much, you know? I thought Javier Bardem did a really good job at that, too.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, like, a really good Silgar. Mm-hmm. But he is getting a hell of a lot more to work with. Zendaya is kind of, like, doing the Javier stuff, but Javier? But she gets, like, 3 sentences. Half of them are, like, dreamy.
You know? Right,
wake up, kind of, you know, dream sequence stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the best part of this movie for me is just some of the depictions of the Harkonnen. I just am so blown away by all of the art design there. Like, yeah, I know we've talked about it, but it's my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah, there's so many things, like just the spice extractors look cool, like, yeah, like Jawas, things on steroids, and then they have these big airships to just come and snatch them when the worms come, and all that.
Yeah, they can fulton them out of there.
Yeah, all that stuff is super cool. I just kept acting like all the things in the trailer, because I was hoping this would be good. Everything I saw in the trailer, that I was just like, I don't know about that, or I don't know how that looks, or man, maybe the Lynch version got it better. Just nah, this is, I'm actually surprised it's got like an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm actually, after I've seen it, because, you know, I was like trying to keep my expectations low. The rest of the world has seen this for like 6 weeks, 8 weeks. It's kind of crazy being an American looking on the outside, looking in. And I just, a word of mouth kept building. And then I saw a bunch of people from the American critical scene that I respected and knew, and they're saying it's like fucking amazing. And now that I've seen it, I'm kind of shocked that critically it isn't over 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, because I mean, the thing is, it isn't a whole tale, and not even close. No. Not even close. So,
and you can tell, I haven't read the books, but I can tell it's not even close to done yet.
Yeah, and it doesn't even end in a particularly satisfying. This is not like Fellowship or the two, to where they have like a really good rousing thing and then get out. Like, they had that, and then they had 40 more minutes of movie to tell.
And I expected him to like go Super Saiyan at the end or something, you know, but he kind of just, if he has killed the boy, it's a very like spiritual thing, not a physical thing, right?
It is in the book, but it's an odd place to put it after all that badass stuff he did. It's like, you know, the signature thing at the end is like his mom kicks a bunch of ass and he scrambles up to the top.
Okay. Okay. Like,
and yeah. then he does the big knife fight. So, but that, again, that's not nearly as epic as what they did before. I don't know. That's the flaw in the movie. There's a little bit of a pacing problem, and it's an incomplete tale. And that's the thing. It's like, if Warner Brothers, I think they have agreed to, I think they've already greenlit the second movie. I think I read that.
God, somewhere. I would hope so.
But if they don't, like, this is going to be legendary in terms of like, what if? If this thing just goes cold and no one and all these actors go to the scatter to the winds, and those years go by and they don't get, I don't even fucking know. It'll be one of the biggest heartbreaks in my lifetime.
Yeah, no, I could see it.
Like, Firefly got nothing on that kind of disappointment.
This feels to me, even though, you know, I'm not one of these people, this feels to me like the Dune adaptation that people have been looking for. Yeah, to have it cut short would heartbreak a lot of people.
Because like the Lynch one was like, you got the whole story, even though you got half the story. They just kind of like, you know, but like it, they did get to finish on its own terms. Like, yeah, like I just start to feel like Dune is cursed.
Yeah.
Like, you can have 100% fidelity, but you'll only get the half the story. Or you can have like a visual dictionary that makes no fucking sense. Or you can have kind of a dull 20-hour sci-fi low budget bullshit that's pretty faithful to the books and content, but it's like, whew, you know, if you're not a sci-fi nerd, there's not much there. At least that's what I thought. And again, I'm a pretty big Dune fan. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, that's the other thing. It's like, if they make Dune, do they stop there, or do they keep going on the sequels? And the other thing is, like, I would hate for them to franchise this out and give it to just anybody. Because clearly, like, when you think of his, you know, when you think of Blade Runner, when you think of Arrival, this guy's got the vision to do these big science fiction epics. Yeah. And can do the tone. I don't trust just anybody with this shit, you know?
Sure. No, I'm with you. I wouldn't want to give this to J.J. Abrams to finish
right.
off.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to Disney-fy this at all. No. Thank God Disney didn't get their fucking paws on this thing. Can you imagine?
I can't even imagine. How could you do the Harkonnens with anything Disney attached?
I thought this movie is PG-13. I was actually wondering. I guess it is. It isn't. It's disturbing. Like I said, the Harkonnens are disturbing, mm-hmm. but they'd be very frightening to children. But are they R-rated? I don't know.
Nah.
Yeah, what else do we... I mean, we could go with the individual cast members, but they're, like I said, there's not a single person that's miscast in this whole fucking movie.
Yeah.
Josh Brolin's amazing. Dave Bautista, I think, did a great job. Mm-hmm. Rebecca Ferguson is the ideal Lady Jessica. Oscar Isaac as Leto. He's just, man, he's got like six sentences to convince you that his family loves him and his men will die for him. And he fucking does it.
Like that Oscar scene where Isaac is great.
Yeah, where he tells his son, it's like, you know, if you're not ready to be the, you know, all these great things I got planned, then you'll just be my son, which is all I've ever needed to be. And I like fucking got choked up.
It looked like they were setting him on two opposing paths at the beginning of this movie. Like, one, you could be the ruler of House Atreides and you could, just figure that out. You know, you don't even have to concern yourself with it. It'll find you. And as long as you answer the call, you'll be good. And then his mother was definitely pushing him toward, like, this is all planned out down to the letter, and you will be, you know, the Kwisatz Haderach or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had those two choices to make. Mm-hmm. And, you know, inevitably in all those kinds of stories, the protagonist finds a third way.
Yeah.
And it becomes the way. And that seems like what is happening at the end of this movie.
Yeah. He's taken his destiny into his own hands.
Yeah. There are a lot of like big, you know, tropey kind of plot lines in this that's kind of buried under a lot of, you know, really, really good design, which is why I like sort of want to lean in and call it a YA, but it's not that. It's probably better than that. But I recognize all of the plots from all of the movies I've seen ever, right, in this movie.
It's funny that you call Dune YA, because like I kind of bristled, but like it is literally about a teenage boy.
It's the chosen one
who becomes the chosen one and does all the training, right? And learns all the arcane knowledge and, you know, leaves the comfort of his
Potter
world.
How
and
is it enters not?
Another and it's the yeah, you're not wrong.
I'm
but
not
it's,
trying
but
to insult like, it. I'm just saying it's like.
Is
I've
Star
seen
Wars
all
YA?
Of these things.
Because, like, is any hero's tale the hero's circle, the hero's journey, is all that YA? Because
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe I don't have a good handle on what exactly that is, but it feels like it to me. It just feels like well-worn territory to me.
If he's forced to get groomed and wear fancy clothes against his will in the next one, while he eats crazy amounts of food and gets fawned on by, then we'll know for sure it's YA. Yeah.
Okay.
That's just Hunger Games in it.
Gotcha.
Okay. Do you have anything more you want to say about Dune?
No, I enjoyed it, whether it's YA or not.
I'm probably going to see this a couple more times, and I might revisit it in future Bald Move things, like, I don't know, off the clock or something, if I get some more stuff or see something particular interesting. But God, I just can't wait. I can't wait for them to come back for more. It's gonna be a long wait, because I think it'll be like they haven't even started the second one, so like we're years away from getting part two if I'm you know,
it's a far cry from what TV's doing right now, right? TV like will greenlight season two before season one is even aired of a show,
and they'll get it out within a year.
Yeah.
I wonder if they couldn't crush this, like if they got like all the money ready to go.
You absolutely could make this movie in a year. Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen them do it on television. Like, it's just movies don't have that pace usually, unless you're Marvel.
Yeah. I noticed this movie's got $165 million budget. And it's already made $129 million before its U.S. release. So it's almost all but assured to get its money back, it seems like. So
yeah,
that's why I've heard that the Warner Brothers pretty bullish about producing the next one.
Nice.
So anyway, all right. Well, we'll see how I cannot wait for the next one. I'm going to be following his production. Actually, I'm not going to follow his production very closely because I didn't do this one. I think it paid off. Like, I just had almost zero expectations other than a lot of people like this movie. But I definitely want to, I'm looking for when the next one's coming out. I hope we can get it in 2023.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, thanks for supporting us. I hope you enjoyed the spoiler-filled review of the movie Dune. Jim didn't hate it. We can all celebrate. And we'll see you in the next one. I think we got Eternals next week, correct?
Yeah.
Be careful out there. There's tons of spoilers floating around about that movie. Unfortunately, I don't know anything about the Eternals. So, like, I've seen the spoilers. I'm like, I don't fucking know what that means. So, nice. just keep on your toes. Keep your head on a swivel. We'll see you back here next week. Until then. No, not next week. 2 weeks from now. Whenever the Eternals comes out.
Yeah.
In November. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.